This is Tom Bernard. Can't get enough of sports talk with Phil Mackey and Judd Zolgad? Tune in to the new Tom Bernard Show podcast Monday through Friday as Phil and Judd join me to discuss the latest sports headlines and whatever else comes to mind.
Just download the Tom Bernard Show app wherever you get your podcasts or visit TomBernardShow.com. It's another way to get more from me and Judd talking sports and having fun with Tom, and it's all at your fingertips. Download the Tom Bernard Show app now and join the conversation.
These guys survived the David Kahn era of Timberwolves basketball and lived to tell about it. It's Flagrant Howls.
Welcome in. We got Kyle in the house, Phil Mackey, and our friend, the legendary Jim Peterson, now a member of the Timberwolves radio broadcast during these playoffs with Alan Horton. What was it like for you guys to sit there and watch the first two quarters of game two? You're sitting there. Alan Horton's been doing this for 15, 17 years with the Wolves, you for 25 years. What were you guys like elbowing each other? Like when they're up by 30 points in Denver about to take a 2-0 lead, what was that like for you, Jim?
I mean, Alan and I were really at a loss for words of what we were seeing, it just was so incredible. And we've seen bits and parts of what that was. I just think one of the best, like, small sample examples of what we saw in that game was what Jaden and Ant did to Kyrie and Luka in Dallas last year, end of game situation, the way that they, completely put them in jail on that great possession that, I mean, should be studied. And, and the one where, Jaden and Nikhil, Nikhil's pressuring 94 feet. And I mean, that possession was just, it was unbelievable, but there was 20 of those possessions and it was like the whole game. And it was when they were up 20, they still were attack dogs. And, I don't know. This, I was trying to work this out with Horton and Grady today at practice, because I told them that when I was sitting there watching that, I was talking with my wife after the game at dinner, and I was trying to tell her, explain to her what that was like for me, what it was like. And so the only analogy I could come up with was the movie Limitless. Did you guys see Limitless?
Yeah.
it's like the team took like a pill. And like everybody like went to their max potential, like in that moment to the nth degree. And it's like one of the things I always said as a coach, and actually Bill Fitch told me my first year when I was going to make the team, he goes, you're going to make the team if you become hard to play against. Like he goes, and so that's like, be hard to, like one of his mantras was be hard to play against. And so what does that mean? It means ball pressure every single time your player catches the basketball. Being hard to play against means don't let them catch it where they want to catch it, disrupt, what they're doing. If you can be disruptive, you could have a role on a team. And those dudes like took some like limitless pill that made the whole team go to their max potential. But you know what it is for me? It's what the limitless pill is the coaching that they're getting from Chris Finch and his staff. Like, they finally are doing what the coaches have wanted them to do. Jaden's crashing from the outside. Ant's making better decisions. Carl's not turning it over and having silly fouls. They are able to rotate and cover for extended periods of time, being hard to play against every tick of the clock. Like, they're 6-0 in the playoffs because somehow these limitless concepts that Finch has been putting into their brains and all their player development coaches, it's not just Chris Finch, it's the entire staff. So that's kind of what I was, because we're seeing things we've never seen. Do you guys agree?
You're seeing like a heightened version. I feel like we're seeing it all put together for the first time. All together. I feel like we've seen flashes of some of this, but it's like you said, it is everyone playing. Like, I described it this way to Grady and Kyle yesterday. Any team in the NBA, when it's the last possession, it's a tie game and you're on defense, and the game is over if you don't get a stop. Even the worst defensive teams are going to lock it in as much as they can for that one possession and play hair on fire defense. But these guys are playing last possession of the game defense for 48 minutes across 6 playoff games. And then probably on Friday and Sunday as well. It's incredible.
I know I get a little prisoner of the moment, but game one, I was like excited as a fan. Like, oh my God, they went in, they stole game one. Like, they didn't have a letdown after sweeping the Suns. All I could feel after game two was like speechless. I think that's what Jim said too, is like, I never have seen that performance from the Wolves, which was limitless, right? They all were on the same pill. And then the Nuggets were on a different pill that just, I've never seen a defending champ kind of go out like that. And again, the series isn't over. I want to say that now, but there was just not a lot of fight or heart in a game where you would think they were extra motivated to kind of at least get one at home. And, you know, there's no Gobert and like, okay, they're kind of on the ropes a little bit. Let's regain the momentum. And there was none of that. So I got to ask Jim though, because he mentioned the coaching, and as people that listen to Jim or watch Jim on TV, like, you sit in a lot of different areas and a lot of different arenas, but in Ball Arena, you were like, what, 5 feet away from Finch, right? So, like, what was he doing? Because you see him second row, but was he as involved in the coaching? We've never really asked anyone this. Like, was he as involved in the coaching as he normally is, just from a row back?
Oh, yeah, and he was the same way at practice, too. Practice and shoot around, he's sitting there on the sideline, his foot's up on a chair. But he is literally, they're dry running their offensive sets. And, you know, the thing about Rudy not being there, they had 2 days to prepare without Rudy, because Rudy left the day before game two at 8 o'clock in the morning. And so he wasn't at practice on Sunday. And so Kyle was running with the ones, and they were going through all of their stuff. And so you talk about the defense, but offensively, they were pretty darn good too.
Yeah.
And they executed. But I'm telling you, like, watching Finch, like, Pablo's installing – and Pablo's orchestrating in the half court, the offensive end. You know, the other coaches are at the other end. You know, Mike is down there, and Elston's down there, you know, doing the defensive end. But sitting Finch is on the offensive end, and they're going through their play call list. And Finch is sitting there commanding and installing. So, like, he's coaching his butt off. And it was so great to see them work on the sets they worked on, and to see it actually executed during the game. I was like, wow, me and Alan were sitting there just blown away. Like, the offensive execution was so good too. And then, like, in game, instead of having the coaching huddle out on the floor, you know, away from the bench, they just had it right there next to our scoring table. So all the coaches were kind of huddled around us, like right there at the table that we were at. In Denver, the scoring table, the broadcast table is right next to the, literally right next to the bench. So Finch is right next to our engineer for radio and next to Horton. And yeah, Finch was coaching, and really it was like coaching, telling Micah, and then Micah, you know, who was like on the court, and then Micah would, you know, basically parrot it back to the players. And it was just, it was working seamlessly. Like, it's, I think it's worked out way better than they could even possibly imagine.
Yeah.
Did you, it's not related because Finch was there and Micah knew this, but I'm just kind of curious to what you thought of the first two games of how Micah did, because he's kind of thrown into a tough spot. And then when you were ever coaching on the Lynx as an assistant, Cheryl got probably tossed a game or two, right? Like, did you have to get thrown in? She didn't? Okay, well, then that question goes away.
But, well, she got tossed once, and she got tossed once where she actually had to leave the floor.
Okay.
Tossed in the Western Conference Finals against Phoenix. She missed the last minutes. But so it was fine. I would sit. It's one of the things that I sat there. I was fearful. You know, you got to be prepared, right?
Right.
Cheryl would come into coaches meetings, and she's like, if I got hit by a bus this morning, what are you going to do? Because, you know, literally that's right. What happened, right? I mean, like, in Cleveland, when Finchie was, you know, not able to come out and coach the game, I mean, like, that was literally happening as they were going out onto the floor. Like, Micah didn't have any time to sit there and prepare. You got to be ready before that happens. And so, like, I would sit there and, like, I prepared for games. I had the same play call list that Cheryl had. I would always copy it, one that she had that we prepared for. I would copy it before every game or take a picture of it and then copy it down later. And then I would always have my end of game situation plays in my breast pocket. I had my own menu of plays and calls. And I had sat there and worked on, you take your dry erase board. And I had sat there with a dry erase board for hours and hours and drawn up plays, and to be ready for that situation, because you never know what's going to happen. And Micah is a stud. I'm telling you, he's he was born for this moment. And it's, you know, and she was joking about how they share a mind, right? And that Mike is so sick, you don't always want to share that mind. but no, those two are so close. And that staff, I can't tell you how good Pablo is, though. Pablo and Elston and, you know, just the whole staff, Kevin Hansen, that whole player development staff. And what a great addition Corliss Williamson's been. You know, that coaching staff sitting in the hotel bar after the Phoenix game, after game four, sitting there talking with them, they gave Corliss a lot of credit for that defensive game plan against Phoenix and how it was executed. So it is definitely a group effort, and Micah is fantastic.
Well, God, there's. I feel like we could do a whole episode. Maybe we should on the assistant coaching staff. I want to come back to something on Micah in a second, but since you brought up Corliss Williamson, he played on the 2003-2004 Pistons team that is regarded as, of the last 25 years, like if you surveyed everyone who's watched basketball the last 25 years, who's the best defensive team you've seen, it's probably the 2003-2004 Pistons. Maybe this Timberwolves team can have a say in those rankings, but that's an interesting connection because that Pistons team was regarded, if I remember right, I was in like high school, but a good team going into the playoffs, and the Eastern Conference was pretty up in the air, but no one's going to really beat this Lakers team full of Hall of Famers. And then you got the KG and Cassell, you know, the Western Conference, like the Pistons aren't a real threat to win the title until every team in that bracket found out about their Clamps defense. It feels like there's a little bit of a parallel that Corliss Williamson is the connection to 20 years later with this Wolves team.
Yeah, I think you're right. And but I thought you were going off a little different tangent because I thought you were going to mention his Arkansas National Championship team
and 40 Nolan minutes Richards.
More 40 minutes of hell.
There's two connections.
So between 40 minutes of hell and the Bad Boys and those, I mean, they're actually the Detroit Piston Bad Boys, but. But Ben Wallace was certainly a bad boy, and he was one of the reasons why he was certainly good. And Tayshaun Prince, yeah, they could that whole team could defend. You're right. I don't know what part of what Alan and I were talking about during that Denver Nuggets game. Two incredible performance was the story of who was the point guard for Minnesota for the Timberwolves. Who was talking smack to Jordan and Pippen, and they decided to like give him the pit bull treatment, and they wouldn't even let him get the ball across half court. He's the kid that played at UCLA. I forget his name right now. Come on, Kyle, you're always rattling.
This is
off
like our random Wolf of the Week segment here.
You keep talking. I'm gonna find this out.
Wolf of the Week. I'll figure it out. But like that's what I was thinking of. Pippen and Jordan is what I was thinking about. Because what Nikhil and Jaden were doing in that game was just reminded me of how great those two guys were.
We got to find this now.
I'm going to come up with the name.
I was just going to ask, because we've never asked this before, and we've mentioned the 20.
Or the Poole Richard, it wasn't Poole Richardson, was it?
No.
No. Just quickly, because you both were fans at the time or whatever. If the Wolves
Derek back Martin.
Who? Derek Martin.
Poor Derek Martin.
Derek Martin.
Yeah, look up Derek Martin talking smack to Jordan and Pippen and them taking it personally, and they would not let Derek Martin get the ball across half court. They humiliated. Yeah. It was pretty funny, actually. Yeah, Derek Martin.
Oh, poor Derek Martin, man. The 1994 through 1996 Timberwolves stint there for Derek. And he came back.
He was on that 2003-2004 team.
Right. Yeah.
I forgot that Corliss Williamson was on that Pistons team from in 04 when they win the title. So I'm just curious because I remember back. That's like my first real image. That was 20 years ago, remembering sports and the Timberwolves. If the Wolves would have gotten through the Lakers, would they have any chance against that Pistons team?
We beat the Pistons twice that year. We beat that team twice.
I couldn't remember, so I was asking you guys.
And, yeah, no, I really feel if Sam hadn't gotten hurt and we would have gotten past the Lakers, I think we would have beaten the Pistons.
Yeah,
I really do believe that because, we beat them twice and KG was so good again. They didn't have the size to be able to deal with KG. I think Mehmet Okor was on that team, but he was more of a perimeter presence. Remember, I don't know if you guys
remember
Okor,
like top of the key, for sure.
3-point shooter. He was a 3-point shooter. Like he was not a challenge for Kevin Garnett physically, but. That was one of the things we always said, man. If Sam hadn't gotten hurt and we would have gotten to the Pistons, we would have won that one.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
I like picking your brain because you played, but I also like picking your brain because you coach. So we're six games into this, and the Wolves just don't lose. So now you come home, you're up 2-0 on the champs, a team that seems pretty deflated. And even today at practice, like, I didn't think the Nuggets had great quotes. They're more just like, hey, you know, it's our job to play basketball. Not a lot of fire, but we'll see. But like, Jim, as a coach, or even when you played, how do you again try to stay away from kind of letting go of the rope or getting too comfortable and keep that? I mean, desperation has been a key word for Finch and his staff all playoffs, but how do you keep that desperation to kind of close this thing out?
They've won here before. I think Denver feels like, and I was talking to Scott Hastings and Katie Wingy about this when we were in Denver, is like, I think both teams feel comfortable on each other's home court, just like we were able to win two games. I think that if you're Mike Malone, you can talk to them and say, we've had a lot of success here on this floor, and so it's not going to mean anything to us. Their game travels. They've been through really difficult situations and scenarios before. They've had their back up against the wall. So, you know, you're only going to be able to do so much. I just don't think physically they are able to with some of the injuries that they've had. You know, I don't know where Reggie Jackson's at right now. He came hopping off the court last ball game, and then where Jamal's at. I was kind of telling you guys earlier, we can get into the whole injury, you know.
What's that like? You played before. Like, what's it like to be 80% to be going up against Lions?
I was telling Alan Horton and Grady this too, like, just was saying how I made it to the NBA. Actually, you know, Dane and Britt and I were having beers after practice in Denver on Sunday. And I was telling them what it was like for me to make it to the league. I didn't leave myself any. I had only one direction to go, because my agent basically told me when I was going to training camp, my summer job when I was at the University of Minnesota was to work for Pillsbury. I worked in grocery sales. So if I wasn't going to make it to the NBA, I was going to probably go back to Pillsbury and get a sales job. And so my agent told me, he goes, look, you can either go sell cake mix, or you can go play with Akeem Olajuwon and Ralph Sampson. You got to decide what you're going to do. So I didn't want to sell cake mix. Yeah. And I was like, so I went to training camp, and I was like, I basically had these three veteran guys in front of me, and I was not going to let them beat me. So I was like super physical, and I ended up just pretty much physically dominating all three of them. And that's why I made it. But then you fast forward 8 years, through two ankle surgeries and three knee surgeries, and I'm no longer now the athlete that I was in year one. And I remember being on the floor trying to guard Sean Kemp, you know, and I'm like 70, 80% of what I was, and I couldn't get up and down the floor, and I certainly couldn't jump like I used to. And what a difficult thing that was. And so when I'm watching Jamal Murray act out in Denver, the way he was acting out, people have been trying to wrap their mind around what made him, what possessed him to be able to do that. And I was telling Horton and Grady, and I was telling Dane and Britt in Denver before it happened, of what it was like for me, how hard it was to be in that space, that injured space of not being able to compete at the same level that these great athletes are at. So when you get hurt, you know, if this is the baseline, when you get hurt, you go underneath that baseline. And just to get back up after, when you're on the rehab circuit, to get back up there takes forever, and you may not get there. But the other guys have risen up. Their athleticism is up there. So you got to try to compete with that. And with these great athletes, I can only imagine that Jamal Murray, when he was being attacked by these pit bulls, that he was not able to respond the way he wanted to, was really difficult for him. Do you know what I mean? So I'm not saying that's what happened, or this was his process, or this is why he did it. I'm saying I can understand that he was probably frustrated physically, because when you go through the ACL that he had to go through and miss 2 years basically, and now you're coming back, you win a championship, and now you're hurt again, and you're trying to win a series against this opponent. I wouldn't want to play against Minnesota, would you? Would you want to play against and Nikhil Alexander Walker? I mean, so
and Nikhil's smiling at him too, like
I know.
That's some sicko behavior. I love it.
So I just, you know, I just like it's really hard to be at the end of your career. And not that Jamal is. Jamal is by no means at the end of his career. I'm just saying right now it's probably pretty frustrating for him. And I cannot believe he did not get suspended for a game for throwing hydroculator pad, a heat pack, onto the court. Those things are big and they're heavy. And what he did, basically trying to throw it at a referee, that is, whether it they saw it or not, after the fact that he wasn't suspended just is completely appalling to me.
And so, and if you go apples to apples, because Jamal Murray did three things that were punishment worthy in that game, but Rudy Gobert did the money sign to Scott Foster like a month and a half ago, gets $100,000, I think, is the max you can find a player for gesture or something like that, right? So yeah, you can't find Jamal Murray $200,000. So you find him $100,000 for sort of the things that he did, but both guys did the money sign, got $100K, and then Jamal Murray winds up throwing a towel at one point and then the heating pad. I don't know, maybe, I mean, Grady said this yesterday. Maybe the punishment is, sorry, dude, you gotta play game three inside Target Center. That's the punishment that we're gonna hand down to you.
It was crazy though. I mean, I'm not even big on like suspensions, cancel, whatever. Like, it just, like you said, Phil, he did three times what Rudy did, and obviously the fine is capped, but I don't know. Well, that's just, and also too, I like him for the most part, Jamal Murray. I think he's a really fun and good player, and Jim just brought up a really good point about the frustration of being injured, but even the Denver people that cover the team really well were like, you know, they're kind of going out like losers, so I'll be excited to see on Friday night, game three, if they show a little bit of extra fight to try to regain a little bit of this rope, because if not, it could go south for them pretty fast, and Sunday could be like a celebration.
Yeah, Jim, what is, like, you know, putting coaching hat back on too? So it's not like the Wolves have just been hot shooting, and that's why they're, I mean, the Wolves are bringing something to each of these six playoff games that is repeatable, which is energy and defense and, you know, picking guys up full court, communication. It's not like they've gone 19 for 30 from 3-point range and they're just going to cool off here. So what is the adjustment, or what is, if Denver's going to get back into this thing, is it just Jokic being more Jokic? I'm going to guess Jamal Murray isn't going to be 100% with the calf strain, but like, what should the Wolves be bracing for, I guess, in games three and games four?
I mean, they can only go so many different ways, but I mean, you really only have to appeal to how hard they play. And can Michael Porter Jr. play harder? I think he can. I think that one of the things that's been sort of a thing for him, like if you talk to the people in Denver, is that he hasn't always played hard. He's kind of played soft. He's been sort of a soft kind of guy. But I think he has the ability to up the intensity level. He's certainly shown it at times. So, I mean, he's a really talented guy that if he catches fire, like, that's what they need him to do. So they need more from him, for sure. And I would never count Jokic and Jamal Murray out. Mm-hmm. Those two have the ability to play at a higher level. And, you know, I mean, we'll have to see. I think you have to sort of implore them to be more competitive, and that's what they need to do, and to not let go of the rope. And I am firmly in the camp of seeing this team as a team that's not going to let go of the rope. They're going to compete. And I think that Ant has this right, and this Timberwolves team has the right mindset of staying humble, that no lead is safe, stay humble. And what I think is going to be the really fun part of this next 3 or 4 days is being around the energy of Target Center. I just can't wait. I mean, how many more sleeps do we have before we get to see this?
Zero.
Yeah.
I'm not sleeping again.
I'm not sleeping at all.
It's constantly pre-gaming.
The get-in price, if you want to sit like nosebleeds upper deck right now before fees on StubHub, I just checked before we hit these mics, it's like $350 to get in and sit nosebleeds. I've never seen anything like that for a Timberwolves game. It's incredible.
I just was going to say, like, the, you know, in Phoenix, you know, 30 minutes before the game, you know, not very much energy. In Denver, 30 minutes before the game, like, not a lot of energy. You know, it's just when the game was starting, the seats were filled, mm-hmm. but the energy wasn't as palpable as it was for me against Phoenix in games one and two. Like Grady, when we were doing our show open on the floor and that sea of white, like, and the energy, the buzz that was starting when the players came out for warmups, and that's, you know, 20 minutes on the clock, it was already buzzing and energy, and it was incredible. And that's why I say, look, we went to Phoenix. When we go to Phoenix, they had purple shirts on the chair. And I'm like, like only about a third of the people put the shirts on.
Right.
But even if they had put them on, it's like a dark. They all kind of blended in, and it was a darker room.
Why not an orange out? An orange out.
Exactly. That's what I was saying. Like, have a like that thing that OKC did yesterday. Like, OKC goes next level, man. They go blue, white.
Yeah.
Blue.
Yeah.
Like that. That's a disciplined fan base, man. For them to actually put those shirts on, and sort of go along with the bit. But what Target? We give them white shirts, and it's a wall of sound, and it's a wall of white. And I'm telling you, it makes a difference. It makes a difference. Yeah. The Timberwolves, I was telling you guys, I was just doing an interview with KNBR with my buddy Tom Tolbert in the Bay Area. And one of the greatest experiences as a basketball fan, and Kyle, I know you're one of the biggest fans of the NBA that I know. You never saw a game during this Warriors stretch at Oracle Arena, did you? Did you ever see a game at Oracle?
I did. I was down there for work a couple Aprils ago in my old job, and I was down there for one game.
At Oracle?
Yeah, at Oracle.
Before not Chase?
Nope, not before they moved to Chase. Okay. This must have been 3 years ago, I think.
When they would do yellow outs, when they would have the yellow at Oracle Arena for a game, it was one of the most intimidating things, and it was just so grassroots and organic and beautiful and impossible to play against. When you had to play against Steph Curry and Klay Thompson at Oracle on a yellow out, it was just one of the most intimidating things. And the only thing I can compare it to is Target Center when it's a whiteout with this team.
At Oracle, they would have like the beautiful people in the front row had the yellow shirts on. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you sat courtside, you still embrace the shirts. That was cool. I mean, selfish plug, Phil, but I'm coming back. I'm staying downtown all weekend where Dane and I are doing a couple of live shows at breweries. I know all the bars around Target Center have like banded together and are doing something. So
it's like 12 of the bars, basically any bar pretty much within a half mile of Target Center is doing a watch party.
I think the 48, 72 hours starting Friday morning, even Thursday night, it's going to be awesome. And it's obviously, you guys know, it's like well-deserved, right? A lot of people haven't, like the last time the Wolves were good, we joke, was on MySpace days. Like, you haven't had this community or this way to connect with fans. And I hope they got to block off streets downtown. Like, I hope it's just chaos and everyone deserves to have a big party and watch this team that's playing the best basketball right now in the league.
How about this too? Like, we check, you know, the podcast ranking chart. So in the top 20 national basketball Apple rankings this morning, three Timberwolves centric podcasts, including this one. Thank you guys. Dane and then Lockdown Wolves. And then KG's podcast is also top 15. So of the top 20 basketball podcasts in America during these playoffs, three are specifically Timberwolves, and then one is Kevin Garnett talking Timberwolves on a regular basis. It's amazing.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, I've said this all the time, and I get ridiculed. I think I was really – I think Common's preposterous statement.
Oh, congratulations.
Congrats.
1 year saying that Minnesota is a basketball state.
Yeah.
I think I made it on the list for saying that Minnesota is a basketball state, and I still maintain it. I still maintain that this state, the people here are really smart about basketball. They know the game. They love the game. And if Minnesota teams win, they're going to follow it. And I think that proves it. The fact that they want to consume and listen to Dane's podcast and consume the you know, sort of all of the Timberwolves content, and he does a great job of getting into the weeds of like the strategy of all of it. And Kyle, you go there with him, and it's great. And the way that he does it with all the beat writers and incorporates all of them. And then all the stuff you do, Phil, you should be really proud of what you've built with Score North and all the things that the content that you guys create. Cause it's just incredible. And then all the bloggers and writers, it's just an incredible community that we all get to be a part of.
Yeah.
Like I always say, the fans have always been like A1, like really smart, grade A. Like, this is a basketball state. It's just the product has never matched what the fans know. True. So I've got to say, we do want to respect your time, but the first time we've talked to you since this Nugget series started, a really high-level question for me. Game one, Ant scores 43 points. It was a religious experience to me. What's it like, man? I asked Grady yesterday, like, is this the most fun you've ever had calling games? And he went through his history of where he's been and some of the guys he's covered and stuff. But just watching this 22-year-old ascend on the court and be the best player on the court against Nikola Jokic, and then what he does post-game and how he is with Carl or all his teammates, just what's it like covering Anthony Edwards?
It's people were asking me, like, if, you know, do we have to go through the pain of having to lose first, you know, to lose to the Nuggets again and then try to learn from it? And then, you know, sort of like there's a rite of passage here or something. And the only thing I can compare it to is like actually having lived it myself was playing with Hakeem Olajuwon, of playing with a guy that is from Africa, doesn't really like, you know, buy into the culture or whatever. Like all he knows is like, you know, what he is entitled to is what he can go and get. Mm-hmm. And so to play with a dude who we beat the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals 4-1, like he didn't have to defer to Magic Johnson or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He wanted it now. We went to the finals our second year in the league together. Ralph Sampson was in his third year. And so these, you know, he just went and took it. The way that he would dominate all these great players in the league, we would kick the Celtics in the butt. We kicked the Lakers in the tail. Julius Irving, he didn't care about any of that. And that's what Anthony Edwards is like. He doesn't care. And that's what, and so he gives this team a backbone. Ralph Sampson, you know, there are a lot of parallels. Ralph was a great player. Ralph was a three-time college player of the year. I mean, not many guys, I don't think any other player's ever done that. Ralph Sampson was a lot like Karl-Anthony Towns. In fact, in terms of being this sort of Ralph wasn't really an alpha, although he was, kind of an alpha. Like he was 7'4", first pick of the draft and all that. Mm-hmm. But it was Dream that gave him a backbone. It was Hakeem Olajuwon that did that. So Edwards does that for this team. Edwards gives them a confidence and a swagger that only a great player can do, just like Magic did. Magic won the championship his rookie year. He didn't wait around. Larry Bird won his championship his second year in the league. Tim Duncan didn't wait around for permission. Tim Duncan won his first championship his second year in the league. So Anthony Edwards is not asking for permission. He is taking this.
That's a great way to put it.
Well put it, yeah.
That's what I love. That's what I love about this dude, man. He is taking it by the throat, and his playoff record speaks for itself, and that's what it's like for me. It's like seeing a great player like Magic, Bird, Olajuwon take this thing by the throat and say, I want to win now. I'm not waiting for anybody.
Yeah. God, Jim Peterson.
Jesus.
Jim Peterson. I just can we tip it off right now? Come on.
No, go. I need a couple beers first. We got to pregame a little bit, but we'll get ready. It's going to be crazy.
It's going to be wild. You can find Jim Pete on the Timberwolves Radio Network with Alan Horton throughout these playoffs and right here on Flagrant Howls as well. So we always love our conversations with you, Jim. Jim and I are going to be in the same building three consecutive nights here this weekend. It's going to be a lot of Jim Pete, Phil Mackey bonding here. Very excited. But enjoy.
Yeah, I'm excited for all of us, man. Seriously, we all deserve it. And it's great to share it with you guys. Just like I was thanking Alan Horton for, you know, he didn't have to, you know, sign on for me to come and do games with him, but you know, we've done it a lot in the past, but he signed up, the Wolves were up for it. And I'm just so grateful to be a part of it. I'm also grateful to be a part of Score North and Flagrant Howls and what you guys do here. And I know Grady feels the same way. So this is great. Let's enjoy this. And I also really loved what Michael was saying too about, you know, I was there in 2003, 2004, and if I would have known we weren't going to come back here for 20 years, I would have enjoyed it a little bit more myself. I thought that was a great point, Grady. So let's enjoy this. You know what I mean? We need to go out and have beers and enjoy this and like, and have camaraderie and let's celebrate. I wish we knew more like Europeans when they go out, they can sing songs and all that stuff.
Right. We're bad at that. Yeah. We're bad at that, man. Like we need some better, go to a Minnesota United game and steal some of their songs and chants, I guess.
I'm excited.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you, sir. Jim Peterson. We'll talk to you soon. Kyle, we're going to keep it here. Couple things before we say goodbye on this episode of Flagrant House.
Let me get a tissue. Hold on. He's the best. Just
dude, we have Grady and Jim Pete just
talking
on this podcast.
I'm not
good
at this. I still struggle with confidence and stuff, but you know, we can't talk about stats and offensive rating and stuff and also not be like, this podcast was the 11th most popular basketball podcast in the country, and it's
thank you guys.
I don't know if it's because of us, but having Grady and Jim and all the people we've had on, and Kilby, who is a recurring guest, it's been a lot of fun. And I know you and I do it for the same reason, but there's so many. I think I've done 29 podcasts since the regular season ended. I just hope people listening to this are taking up Grady's advice and Jim's advice to just enjoy this. I mean, really, this next weekend, I've seen a lot of fearlessness now of just not getting too ahead of your skis. Just embrace it. Like, you're up 2-0. You have the advantage. We've literally prayed for times like this. So
yeah,
that was my it.
I can't wait for Friday night. And, you know, there's still like 15% of my Wolves PTSD. It's like, yep, Jokic is going to be here. Like a 12-0 run by the Nuggets to start the game or something. But it's going to be wild. And yeah, it's cool that a bunch of the bars downtown Minneapolis are banding together to do watch parties, because not everyone can get in the building. And even if you were going to buy a ticket, not everyone wants to pay $400 to sit in the top row of the upper deck. So the fact that people can still come downtown and soak it in is going to be just wild here. So I still feel the same way the Wolves do, which is like respect for the opponent. This is no, like, the Nuggets are no joke. Like, you punk them, and they've had a week now, 4 days, to put together some sort of plan. The Suns felt a little quitty to me, like a little bit. Five guys,
they've
five
never
Cavs.
Done it, right? Like, they're just all kind of colleagues, I guess, versus like a family. Yeah. But I firmly expect the Nuggets to win a game this week.
100%.
I do. And if the Wolves sweep them, we're going to have another conversation about this just being a completely different type of team. Because I didn't think they would sweep the Suns. And I just, again, like, gentleman sweep is just kind of what happens. One team tries really extra hard in a game to eliminate the embarrassment of what happens in the offseason if you get swept.
Yeah.
So I think Denver will take a game this weekend, and if they don't, they're going to have a hell of a summer, and I'm going to have a hell of a weekend. So
it's going to be okay, a couple things before we wrap. We did a pretty deep dive. This is the second Flagrant House of the day. Judd and I saw the Rudy Gobert Defensive Player of the Year thing, and said we should at least touch on that and give Rudy some extra love. But I want to throw something at you about Rudy. So again, like, that trade was clowned by everyone. This is the worst trade in NBA history, this, that. And even as he gets the Defensive Player of the Year award, it I guess my point is, it has never felt like he gets the credit he deserves for being as impactful as he is on the court. And it's in large part because a lot of the things that he does to impact winning are not sexy things that you want to put on Thursday night TNT primetime matchups. You're not really advertising, like, tonight on TNT, watch Rudy Gobert chase guards out of the lane without actually blocking shots. Like, it's really nuanced, but coming up next. So I decided I want to go, can we quantify how great he has been, not only with the Timberwolves this year, but just like in the last 8 years that he has won the four Defensive Player of the Year awards. So I believe there's some advanced metrics that I do believe hold some water. I think, like, there's better ways to measure performance, Kyle, than just points per game and And so this isn't a perfect metric, but win shares tends to at least be an all-encompassing metric that it's like win shares over the course of NBA time tell you that Michael Jordan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and LeBron James are the three best players. Like, it's in line with what you see with your eyes. So this year, NBA win shares, Nikola Jokic, number one. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, number two. Giannis, number three. Sabonis, four, by the way. Another highly underrated player in a market that no one talks about. Luka Doncic, five. Anthony Davis, six. Rudy Gobert, seventh in the NBA in total win shares. If you go back the last 8 years, so since he won his first Defensive Player of the Year award and has become one of the most impactful players in the game, the last 8 years, win share rankings, Nikola Jokic, number one. Giannis, number two. James Harden, regular season James Harden, number three. Rudy Gobert, number four. The fourth most win shares of any player in the league the last 8 years. But no one talks about him on that level. That's my beef.
The thing I liked, I don't stamp that. Like, that was everything you said was perfect. they don't make a lot of Rudy Gobert TikToks like they do Ant, right? That's not like watch, like you said, watch him defend this screen or chase a guy around the perimeter.
Watch him set this clamp screen so Mike Conley can come around on a curl and hit a three-pointer at the top of the key, right?
And he does get clowned a lot. You know, Carl gets clowned a lot too. I imagine the response is always publicly, like, I'm not really on social media. That's not really true a lot of times. Like, these guys are on it or are connected to it. So I imagine after a while, it's got to just, I don't know, man. Like, there's there's a couple people in the YouTube comments that don't always love me, but it does kind of take a toll after a while. But the thing for Rudy that stood out today from accepting his fourth Defensive Player of the Year award was seeing every single teammate on an early, that was an early press conference, by the way, like 9:30 a.m. I wasn't even up on the West Coast. So I kind of wake up and all of a sudden, like, there's everyone on his team there. And then he told Krasinski, like, what, you know, what does this mean? All stuff that he found a home. I mean, that man was very comfortable just spending the rest of his life living in Utah. And for him to kind of call Minnesota home, it just kind of reinforces what a lot of us thought that first year. Because the first year of the Rudy Gobert experience, the trade was not that good. It did not meet expectations. And now you've exceeded expectations in my mind. But I think a lot of that just has to do with being more comfortable with his teammates, the organization. If you're listening to this and you've ever worked anywhere for 8 or 9 years and then you move to a different state and a new job, I imagine that first 6 to 12 months is clunky. And that's, I thought, how Rudy Gobert played last year was kind of clunky. So I'm just really happy for him because, again, I've embraced defense so much as like a fan. Like, I think it's fun to watch teams play, you know, elite, elite defense. Like, people liked watching the Warriors with KD play elite, elite offense. Like, they had a death lineup. The Wolves,
they have a couple death defensive lineups.
Yeah, Jaden, Carl, and Rudy or something. Like, it's just all this size and this death lineup on defense. So I'm really happy for him. And, I mean, you know, too, I've been pulling receipts and I've been petty at times too. But even I and you were both like, man, that's a weird trade to make in the moment. Did you overpay and stuff? And we were even a little, not down on it, just kind of questioning. And it goes back to Tim Connelly's vision and just the hard work Rudy's put in to kind of embrace his teammates and the teammates embracing him. And, you know, Rudy Gobert doesn't win a Defensive Player of the Year award if his teammates on the perimeter are bad. You know, I know he did in Utah, but it's just,
well, they aren't doing, Utah didn't do this in the playoffs. Right, I mean, they went to the second round and they went to the conference finals, but like, they didn't look like this defensively in Utah.
Yep. And it's just a testament to his work ethic too. Cause one of the questions about that trade was this whole thing about the timelines. Right. And I think Rudy's extended his timeline by, again, I'm in the locker room pregame for these games, man. And he's just doing a ton of crunches. And if I had to go play NBA defense for 48 minutes, the last thing I would just be like carb loading. Like, I would do the opposite. So for him to put as much care and time into his body, and then, you know, a little credit to Ant on this too, but for Ant to speed up his timeline, all those ingredients have made this, I mean, this is, right? Like, the only way to describe what we're experiencing is special. Yeah. And Grady said it, and Jim said it, and I've said it, and Britt said it, and you said it. We don't, nothing's guaranteed moving forward. So embrace this special moment. Today was a special day for Rudy. It's been a special week. He welcomes his first kid, and now he gets his fourth Defensive Player of the Year award. I think joining only Ben Wallace and Dikembe Mutombo is the other guy. I mean, those guys are literally defensive legends that people will talk about for decades. And haters, sorry, but it just solidified him becoming a Hall of Famer.
Oh, like, he's,
you don't think Rudy Gobert is making the Hall of Fame, you got to go look who's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
because
he's
I'm actually 9 spots on the podcast rankings away from getting in there myself. So Rudy Gobert is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And today just kind of added to that trophy room.
One more thing before, because you have a big important A-job meeting here in a few minutes. But when I get a text from Kyle that says, is there a place you trust that shows market size rankings? We should talk about this. So I don't even know what you want to talk about. I have a feeling, but why are you researching market size rankings?
Because I have a take, and it's that, well, first of all, I wanted to back up this take, but my take was Minnesota. Again, it's Minnesota. It's the Minnesota Vikings, the Minnesota Twins, the Minnesota Lynx, the Minnesota Timberwolves, not Minneapolis. But they refer to it as a small market. And I've never really thought that's true. But with players leaving and not signing here and just all this stuff and the lack of coverage, for the most part, it's kind of been true. But then I wanted to look it up and see actually the rankings, because part of my take was, hey, maybe just all the teams have sucked. Not the Lynx. They've been awesome. But like, do the Minnesota teams not get coverage because for most part they kind of suck? And now, like, the Vikings, when they were good, or football's a little different. But this Timberwolves team now is on the A block of First Take and Pardon the Interruption and all these shows. So I just wanted to go look it up. And then there's also some talk today, too, about from some Denver people being like, oh, you know, Anthony Edwards, I don't know if he's going to stay there the whole time. Small market.
Dude, my head popped off a couple days ago on a Flagrant Halls episode. I won't redo the rant, but just from 2 days ago.
All I want to say is, according to a very important website you sent me from, I think, like Nielsen, Minnesota, Minneapolis-St. Paul is the 15th biggest media market. So just use this, save this away for when you argue with friends or haters down there, but they're the 15th biggest media market.
Yeah.
That is ahead of Denver.
And of Miami.
Of Miami, of Cleveland, of Portland, where I live, of Indianapolis, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, San Antonio, Kansas Nashville. City, Milwaukee, Las Vegas, Oklahoma City, New Orleans. My whole point is Minnesota and this specific market is not a small market. And we no longer need to worry about, you know, I think good players want to play on good teams with good fan bases. And I can't speak as specifically to the Vikings or the Twins or any other team, but the Timberwolves have the best of the best fans and right now one of the best teams. So I'm sorry that the lazy national narrative is that, well, he's probably not going to stay there. As Jim just said before we let him go, this kid's just different. He's not going to wait in line at the DMV. He's just going to walk up and get his ID and get out of there. Anthony Edwards doesn't have to do what all those other people did to go to big cities to get the coverage, because he's leading SportsCenter, ESPN, TikTok, social media. Like, he is everywhere, and he resides in Minneapolis, and I am so proud of that.
Yeah, that's great. It's very sentimental of you, Kyle. But just think of if Anthony Edwards were to go to New York, right? Where it's all these New York media members, they dim the lights and get all excited if they can maybe talk about stealing an athlete from a smaller market, saving them from the podunk cities of America and bring them to the vaunted New York Knicks franchise that hasn't won a championship in 51 years, that's been to the playoffs 7 times since 2022, the same amount as the Timberwolves, that's been beyond the first round 3 different times since 2002. Like, I'm here just to wrap this point, just to even further drive it home that you don't need to be in LA or New York to be relevant, to have national commercials, to star in movies, to get a shoe deal that's wildly popular, to have more Instagram followers than the entire New York Knicks starting lineup. Just throwing out some examples, right? I'm going to ask you a few questions. Who is the most popular, best football player in America the last 5 years?
Patrick Mahomes.
Market 34. Who is the most popular and best basketball player of the last 20 years?
LeBron James.
Yeah, spent most of his career in market 19. I mean, what are we doing here? I could give you a million other examples too. You know, I mean, Giannis, you could look at the Mount Rushmore of the best players in the NBA right now, the most popular. Jokic, smaller market than Minnesota. Giannis, smaller market than Minnesota. In fact, I started this list on Twitter the other day. We should make a list of all the players in podunk markets that we need to save and get to the Lakers or the Knicks. And I don't care if they have to fill out bench spots with Damian Lillard because, hey, we just have to stash players on the Knicks to save you from Milwaukee and Portland. Let's start making a list. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander got to get his ass out of Oklahoma City. Can't possibly be pop. Kevin Durant, Devin Booker in Phoenix. You're in the desert? That's nowhere near a top market, right? Get those guys out. Get them to the Lakers. It's absurd, dude. Anthony Edwards has 5 times as many Instagram followers as Jalen Brunson. Brunson's been on the Knicks for 2 years, like scoring 40 points a game in the playoffs. So it's the dumbest, laziest argument. Is there a chance at some point that he could go to a different franchise? Of course, but KG stayed for 12 years. And then he went to Boston. We had to shove him out the door because he didn't want to take the trade. But the franchise was in such disarray, like it just made sense from both parties. So,
and by the way, this conversation was not directed towards anyone locally because they all agree with
it's directed toward Craig Carton and some of the like the New York media that's just, I don't know, like I actually feel bad for Knicks fans because you have this incredible historic arena, you've got celebrities all over the first 3 rows of Madison Square Garden. Anytime your franchise wins a first round playoff series, you think now is the time that the Knicks are going to be back to relevance for the first time since 1973, and there's always another team there or LeBron James or somebody that you run into. So, like, yeah, like they would love to have Anthony Edwards, but New York needs Anthony Edwards 100 times more than Anthony Edwards needs New York. And don't get me started on the Lakers, dude. So if you're Anthony Edwards, would you rather be the savior of the Timberwolves and have a statue right next to Target Center? Or would you rather be the 20th guy in line that played for the Lakers and won a championship, right? Like,
I mean, I'm a big LeBron guy, and he won a title during the bubble. And I have Lakers fans in my life being out on the West Coast, and not all Lakers fans have, like, embraced him as a Laker.
Yeah. He's not a true Laker. Yeah.
I mean, okay. Anthony Edwards could win a title maybe this year, knock on wood, series not over. And we'll have this conversation if it happens. I will not allow us to have this conversation until it happens. But if it does, I mean, where does he creep into the best athletes of all time in Minnesota on the men's side?
Oh, man. And we should. Kirby Puckett is like cemented for a generation for sure. Or two generations.
But I mean, like Kevin Garnett, he
passes KG.
He
got a 21
tattoo a while ago, and like if he wins a title, he passes KG at 22. Dude, and funny. I love Kevin Garnett, but like, so I'm glad we had that. It felt good to get that off our chest. But let's bring it back and close it out. I know we're going to be doing recaps after games and stuff. But again, if you are in or around the city this weekend in the state, even if you can't make it and you got to go to another, I mean, I've seen so many bar photos from all over the Midwest that are Nas Reed towels hanging and stuff. So it's my last, like, enjoy it. Because we have all sat through so many years of, you know, I told Dane this the other day, Phil, the lottery's next week. Bet you didn't know that. Doesn't matter. Like, you worry about your ping pong balls. Just slot the Timberwolves in to pick 26, 27, or God forbid, pick 30.
We have done, in the history of the Mackey and Judd show, we have done several live lottery watch parties before. Yeah.
We will, yeah, I'll do that from my man cave or something. But no, this is cool. I'm so happy for the fans. I'm so happy for all the people that work for the organization, for this team. And business is not done. They had such an impressive showing, I thought, in game four against Phoenix. I expected a letdown in game one because that's just kind of what happens. And they took it up another level. I expected an even bigger letdown in game two because they got one. And they leveled up again. So if Jim is onto something with this limitless pill, Friday night, Nas gets his Sixth Man of the Year award. Mike Conley gets his Teammate of the Year award. Rudy Gobert gets his, I mean, they're going to have to delay that tip by 30 minutes. He gets his Defensive Player of the Year award. We'll have all sorts of owners on hand. New York has Spike Lee. Minnesota has Craig Kilborn. I'm sure he'll be there. So it's going to be wild at Target Center at 8:30 on Friday night.
Amen. Amen. Thank you guys for making Flagrant Howls what it is. For Kyle, for Jim Peterson, even for Grady, the newest contributor to Flagrant Howls, and the sports dad, Judd Zolgad, producer Ross. Thank you guys. This is a Timberwolves Lifestyle Podcast.